Hello, everyone. My name is Rick Simpson, and you're listening to PeoplesInternetRadio.com, one of the major voices of truth in our world.
Good afternoon, and welcome to PeoplesInternetRadio.com. This is Raconteurs News on a Saturday. It's the 23rd of January, 2016. How are you doing, Andy? Are you with me?
I'm with you, mate. Spoken like a true DJ now.
Oh, yeah, well, that's what I did for 25 years. I just sometimes forget to put my DJ voice on, you know what I'm saying? Anyway, we got a great, great show lined up tonight, today, this afternoon. We've got Max Egan with us, joining us today, haven't we? Would you like to say hello, Max?
Hello, everybody. It's nice to be here. Thanks for asking me on the show. Pleasure to come and talk to you.
It's our pleasure, Max.
Brilliant, Max. Now, I understand you're in Peru at the moment.
Yeah, I've come to Peru. I like Peru, and I've got a bunch of talks I've got to do in Mexico and the United States, and so it's just sort of easier to do it from here because it's less travel and it's less expensive and all that sort of stuff. Plus, it's a lot cheaper for me to live here. I'm kind of running out of money, so I've got to move to a third world country so I can keep it going, really. That's a lot of the reason I'm here. Also, I mean, it's good, healthy food here, and the laws in Australia are getting pretty out of control. So, I thought I'd base myself here for a little while and just see how we go. I mean, I want to work on a new film. I want to take some time out and try to get my health back on track a little bit. So this is a good place to do it. So that's what's brought me.
Mm-hmm. Well, last time we were due to have you on, Max, you got jumped and got a bit of a kick in. Is everything all right in that department now?
Yeah, a lot better now. The ribs have healed. It's okay. Still a little touchy. If I get a massage or anything, they can't sort of push too deep. But it's all good. So this is just what happens. It's all par for the course. This is what happens when you start speaking the truth and reaches ears that don't particularly like it, I guess. So yeah, it was a bit of a shock, but better now. So it's all good. It's in the past. It makes me stronger. These sorts of things, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And It's not going to hold me back. It just kind of strengthens my resolve, really. Lets me know I'm on the right track.
Mm. Well, Jason's been in hospital twice in the last few weeks. First time with a heart attack, so you should be strong as an ox, Jason.
Yeah, strong as an ox. That's what I am, strong as an ox.
Yeah, well, I hope so, brother. That's not what we want. We don't want heart attacks. That's not a good look. So I have to. You should be here, mate. You should be here eating the organic food. You have to come to Peru for a while.
Do you know, I think that might not be a really bad idea because all I just feel at the moment is just like, this is the second one and I'm 45 years old, so it's time to make things count. Anyway, talking about making things count, what's really on your agenda at the moment? What sort of things are you looking into? What are you working on? And what sort of research are you doing?
Well, mate, the research is wherever it takes me. It's all over the place as usual. There's so many dots to connect. It's a never-ending thing. My main focus at the moment is my health and working on some films. I've got two half-finished films, or one half-finished film and one that's kind of half-written. So I really want to do some work on them, and that's another one of the reasons I'm here. And there's also Full Circle Project, which was an ongoing thing. And Full Circle Project is about linking everybody up. We're going to have a plane fly over in a second. I can hear it coming. So you may find it's a little loud in a minute or two. Here it comes. But Full Circle Project is an ongoing thing that I've got happening, which is about connecting people up in their local communities. And I've had a lot of response to it. I've had a lot of people contacting me and saying that they've got these things happening, they've got these groups happening. What it's really about is linking people up. Like, wherever we are around the world, we need a support group around us. And I meet a lot of people who say that they're awake and they want to be involved, they want something to do, but they've got no support group around them. So that's basically what Full Circle Project's for. It's so you can link up and find a support group in your area, and you can see what other people are doing, and you can kind of mirror what they're doing in your area. And, I think we really need action on the ground. We've been talking about this online for so long. We've been disseminating information. People sort of know what's going on now, but they need some sort of group. They need some sort of something they can do in their community on the ground to move things forward. We've got to sort of get offline, and we've got to start getting involved in our communities. And that's really what Full Circle Project's about. It's not so much of a social thing. It's just a connector, so you can connect up and you can see what people are doing, and you can find people in your area and you can take action in your area. Now, we've got to start addressing things from the root cause of the problem. We've got to start reining these governments in. We really do. You know, talking about it is all very well, and research is all very well. You know, I've been suggesting for a while now that people pull their heads out of their rabbit holes for the moment and pay attention to what's going on around us, because the world is being run by criminals, and they've got some very, very big plans that they're unfolding now. And, you know, we're going to be locked down into a police state very, very soon if we don't pay attention and start calling these people out. So that's my big focus, trying to get people to just pay attention to what's around them at the moment and deal with it, so then we can actually find out what is going on, you know. So many people say, you know, this is what's happening, this is what's happening, this is who the controlling hand is, blah, 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 and you can prove it's anybody you want. Really, there's information out there to prove it's anybody you want. My argument is that the world is run by criminals and we need to stop it from what it's doing, stop the direction that we're going, rein everything back under control and get us back to a point of safety. And then we can find out what's actually going on, you know. But too many people I've found in the so-called truth movement have an agenda. They want to be the big guru who's got the answer or found all the right clues or got the right story or whatever. And people just aren't really dealing with the situation, you know. You know, it's been a kind of disappointing in many ways that the truth movement or the awakening movement or whatever you want to call it. I mean, we are seeing a huge awakening, but it's been disappointing in seeing so many of the major players are so into supporting their own agenda, and there's been so little willingness for people to unite and put their stuff down with each other, put their rabbit holes down, just unite into one strong, communal, united voice and call this system out. And that's really what needs to happen. You know, I think, you know, after a while of research, and you can point the finger anywhere you want. You can prove, in inverted commas, it's anybody you want if you really want someone to point the finger at. But really, it's not about pointing the finger. It's about getting us out of this situation, and that requires participation. So that's been my main focus, and trying to get people involved in that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is so much information on the internet. It doesn't matter what you choose to believe. You can always find enough evidence there to support it. And one thing that I've seen recently, Max, and I despair sometimes, I've had so many friends who seem to be on the same kind of, same page as me, but recently so many of them have been disappearing off down this flat earth rabbit hole, and it seems to me that that's a massive engineered distraction. Do you see it that way?
Well, yeah, I do, absolutely. I mean, there's people, I was looking at a video of it the other day, because I keep quite a close eye on it. I mean, it is a fascinating topic, but the problem is that people that get involved in it, they can't think about anything else. And I actually saw a video of a guy, and he said, you know, when once he got this knowledge, he put everything else aside, and that's all he focused on. And I'm seeing that with a lot of people, and that is causing the massive escalation in the control grid that we're seeing, because people just aren't focused on it. They're discussing the shape of the construct. And personally, I mean, and people say to me, why won't you go and look at this? And I say, well, it's irrelevant to me. It doesn't change my life. It doesn't affect my life in any way. Mm-hmm. People say, well, you know, if the earth's flat, well, it means there's a God and all this sort of stuff, you know, and they've got to do the right thing. And well, I do the right thing anyway. If that's what it takes to make you do the right thing, I feel quite sorry for you. You know, but the problem is that this is an issue that's been debated for thousands upon thousands of years. And as far as I'm concerned, from my perspective as a little speck on the surface of this earth, I can't tell either way, and I can't find enough information to prove either way what this construct is. So I'm an agnostic as far as the shape of the earth goes. It falls down a little bit with the claim of flights that aren't made across the Southern Ocean. I mean, one of the flights they say doesn't exist, flight QF-27. Of course, they've all said, oh, no, you faked it. You know, you didn't record landing at Santiago. You didn't record this. You didn't, you know, all this thing. All you got to do is prove that the gate's there and the people are loading the plane, boarding the plane. I mean, the flight exists. It's a real flight, you know. So It sort of falls down there, and things when they're, the stuff they say of the planets, that we're just getting CGI images of the paintings of planets. Well, I don't know. I've got an 8-inch Dobsonian telescope at home with a 2-inch eyepiece, and I look at Saturn and Jupiter all the time. And Saturn looks like Saturn. It looks like a ball with very, very visible rings around Jupiter, like that beautiful coloured ball with the big red spot. I mean, I look at this all the time through my telescope. It isn't a painting that I'm getting from NASA. They don't, you know, come and paint on my lens so I see this thing moving across it. It doesn't work that way. So there's a lot of it that falls down. Ultimately, it makes no difference. It's a distraction. And you're not going to find out what the shape of this construct is. You're not going to find out what's going on this world at all until you have the freedom to actually find out. And so that's where I think the attention should be focused, on establishing freedom. And we've got every means we need to do that. I mean, the global situation is begging out for humanity to simply step into their humanity and call this out. The world is run by criminals. It's as simple as that. Just the fact that everybody's in a state of hardship, the fact that we've got all these wars going on, the fact that they're dropping depleted uranium all over the place, whatever their excuses, it doesn't matter what they write on paper. It doesn't matter what they say. What matters is that we realize that this is a world populated mainly by human beings who are destroying their habitat and destroying each other, because we have been trained to believe that we have to do what these people we elect to office say. But we don't. It's not about that. These people are supposed to manage things properly, and all they do is wage war and depopulate and fill us full of poisons. I mean, we've got to deal with that, and then you can discuss what the shape of the construct is. You know, I found tens of thousands of people have been siphoned off down this rabbit hole, and all they're doing is fighting amongst each other. There's been a huge amount of animosity come from this rabbit hole. People that I know who were very well-spoken, eloquent people, have gone down and become flat earthers, and now all they can do is belittle and berate and insult anybody who isn't prepared to look at the research. And even if the Earth is flat, let's for argument's sake say it is. Well, okay, now what? Are you leaving? What are you going to do? It doesn't change anything. And how is it going to solve any problem? What, are you going to go over to Netanyahu in Israel and say, hey, listen, Benjamin, the Earth's flat? He's going to go, oh, my God, the Earth's flat. I'm going to have to pull down this wall and free these Palestinians straight away. I'm going to have to stop bombing people and stop stealing all the land and spraying all the crops. They'll stop bombing Syria straight away once they know the Earth's flat, won't they? This is what I mean. It won't make any difference at all. How does it change anything? And there's so much, like, what can I say? It's you're looking into theory and you're claiming it as fact. There's so much absolution on this, saying this is the way it is, and you don't know. You haven't got the freedom to actually go and research. It's an issue that's been debated since the dawn of time. And you can find enough proof to continue the argument either way until the end of time. So what difference does it make? If you really want to know, then you need to establish the freedom to actually find out. Until you've got that, then it's a moot point. It's an invalid argument. It doesn't lead anywhere. It just ties people up in division and ties people up in arguments. So what's its purpose? And I think it's come out at a particularly interesting time. The timing has been incredible. And it's swept across the internet so fast that you can't tell me that this isn't controlled opposition. I absolutely believe it is, regardless of the shape of the construct.
And that's not to say that all flat earthers are government agents or controlled, but it's just to say that they've been taken in by this. It's essentially entertainment. It's another way to divide people within the community, because people who look at flat earth would probably be the same people who look at alternative media and alternative websites. So it's another way to divide those people up into two different categories.
Well, yeah, it's split the movement incredibly, and also it's another saviour program. You know, the Earth's flat, we're all saved because everything's different to what we thought. It's another saviour program. The world, something's going to change. There's going to be this big awakening and everything's going to change, and I don't actually have to do anything. It's just another savior program, and it's dividing and it's distracting, and it's not changing anything. It's caused a huge escalation in the control grid. And yeah, I'm not saying that flat earth is a government agent. I mean, there's a lot of good, serious people who have found a lot of information which is relevant and interesting. I mean, a lot of the the stuff they say about curvature is quite interesting. I mean, it would indicate that the calculations that we're given regarding curvature are severely wrong, or something that they're telling us about curvature is completely wrong. But that's about the only thing in the whole flat Earth debate that you can really discuss or prove. The rest of it is speculation. The talk of ice walls, the talk of what gravity is, the talk of toroidal fields and this and that. I mean, you don't know any of it. It's noise. It's speculation. If you really want to look at it, you could discuss the fact that there seems to be a severe problem with curvature. This doesn't appear to be the way they've told us, or someone has miscalculated somewhere. I mean, there's a good possibility that it's simply miscalculations, because when you look at how it was all set up in the beginning, how they the whole concept that it goes of 8 inches a mile and all this sort of stuff, and how trigonometry works, and I mean, these are all sorts of debates we can get into, and there's possibilities that some of these calculations are flawed. So until we've actually sat down and rationally figured it out, we're not going to know. But all of the rest of it, the talk of ice walls, the talk of toroidal fields, the talk of what gravity is, the talk of, you know, a dome and stars and planets and all this is all noise. It's stuff that you can't possibly know. Nobody can know. And anybody who's saying this is the way it is a fool, because they can't know. The only thing that they can actually know is that the calculations for curvatures appear to be wrong. So something's going on regarding curvature. There doesn't appear to be any curvature, or not the way they tell us anyway. So that's something that could be discussed. But the rest of it is noise, and that's the problem. There's been so much speculation and noise put around it. And even when you try to eliminate some of the noise, like I did documenting that flight Q27 the other day, QF27, they just say, oh, you're a liar. You're a liar. You've disproved my theory, so you're a liar. That's their whole defense. Oh, you made it up. You're a fake. Mm. You know, so this is not research. This is not research. This is not rational. It's not leading anywhere. It's just leading to argument. And you look at some of these threads, they've got, you know, flat Earth videos, they've got hundreds of thousands of views and thousands upon thousands of comments. People are just sitting there putting all of their time and energy into this debate while the world is decaying around them and they're not paying attention. Pretty soon they're going to come out of this rabbit hole and they're going to find that they can't even research on the internet the way they did, because they didn't pay attention to the control grid and to the prison that was being built around them while they were so busy arguing about what the shape of it was. That's the problem with it, you know?
Yeah, I think as well they pay too much attention to this this prison that's being built around them. Now, I just wanted to move on just to what's the situation like in Palestine at the moment? We get news, but I mean, most of it you have to really dig deep to get some decent news about what's really going on in Palestine. And what made me ask this is I saw this today. A new story, a British bank has closed the account of a Palestinian, Friends of Al-Aqsa, is it? Friends of Al-Aqsa? But they're a pro-Palestinian charity, and the cooperative bank today have just closed their account in a move that's been described as politically motivated and Islamophobic. Now, what is it? Why are they determined to destroy Palestine?
Well, you know, it's the whole, you know, Israel can't exist while Palestine exists. We can't have any sort of internal threat. But again, if they wanted to destroy Palestine, they could go in and do it in a week. I mean, West Bank and Gaza Strip, it's got no real weaponry. It's got no real protection. You know, we're told Hamas is this terrible terrorist organization. You know, Israel is one of the most powerful militaries on earth. They could go in there in a week and they could clean the whole place out if they wanted. They need Palestine there because it always provides the concept to the world that Israel is a victim. It's always fighting off terrorists at its doorstep. That's what it's all about. But the situation in Palestine is absolutely horrendous. West Bank is virtually under lockdown, has been for months now, ever since that staged attack on the bus. Apparently, you know, two Palestinians attacked a bus in West Bank. This was completely staged. There were no Palestinians that attacked that bus. They dragged probably a couple of prisoners on there and just shot them as the terrorists and set the whole thing up so they could lock West Bank down. Gaza Strip is absolutely in a terrible state. They've been doing airstrikes in there the last few days. They've been spraying their crops and destroying their crops and doing everything they can to make sure they keep them angry and keep this animosity going. See, they try to breed terrorists with the Palestinian people as well. That's why they brutalize them so much and treat them so badly, because they want to keep the animosity going. They want people to be able to go and interview a Palestinian and ask them what they think about Israelis, and the Palestinian say he wants to kill all the Israelis. And then Israel can go, oh, see, they want to kill us all, so we have to do what we do. But really, it's because Israel does what it does that, you know, the Palestinians are angry with them. So, I mean, it's a horrendous situation. And now you've got these things, like you say, banks pulling, closing accounts and things of Palestinian charities. I think this has been done in a response to the amount of flack that Israel is getting. We've actually had the UK Doctors Association call for the removal of Israel from the World Medical Association because they've been found to be torturing Palestinian patients. When patients come in, they medically torture them when they're operating on them. So there's so many things coming out about Israel now that I think there's some organizations that are trying to, you know, put these sort of ideas forward that you need to withdraw funding from Palestine. But I don't think it's going to work. I mean, the whole world supports Palestine. Everyone knows what Israel is now, I think. Israel is an absolute pariah state that was founded on terrorism and built on a lie. The people who populate the state have no claim to the state at all, no genetic ties to it. I mean, there are some Semitic Jews there. There are some original inhabitants there, but most of the people that populate it are European. They have no claim to it. And it's just been used as a massive destabilization mechanism. I don't even think the people who run Israel give a damn about the Jews at all. I don't even really think they give a damn about Israel. They just want to destabilize this whole region and destabilize Europe the way they're doing. So, you know, I think it's all part of a larger plan. But, you know, Palestine, to me, provides a key for mankind to rein this entire system back under control. This is why I focus on it so much, because Gaza Strip and even West Bank, this is all collective punishment, and it's a war crime. It's an open war crime being supported by thousands of politicians around the world, which means that all of these politicians are war criminals, which means all the legislation they've enacted is all invalid if we call it. Again, you know, the people have to call it. This is what I'm trying to do with Full Circle, is to get these strong communal voices happening of people who are prepared to not just start permaculture gardens and start their little alternative movements, but to actually become a political movement and turn to the politicians and call them out for what they are, because they're a bunch of criminals, a lot of them. And Palestine proves it. The fact that Palestine's there, the fact that Gaza's there, you know, that this is allowed, this type of collective punishment is allowed in 2016, this is absolutely disgraceful. And it's against everything that we know as law, everything that should be law. It's against international law. It's against every moral law we've ever had, any moral fiber we should have. You know, it's an affront against all it means to be human. And we have the means to call it out. And we even have the legal means to actually deal with it under international law and even under the law of our own countries. It's, you know, you're not allowed to support war crimes. You're not allowed to do any of these things. But, you know, we always want someone to lead us to safety. We want our politicians to fix things. We're not prepared to stand up and call things out ourselves. And if we were, I think Palestine provides us that opportunity. So I think it's a gift in many ways. And you know, people have to understand that it's children in collective punishment. The Palestinian people are beautiful, beautiful people. They're not terrorists, not like what you're told at all, you know. You go there and meet them, and every person that I know who's met one of my Palestinian friends, even online, has just ended up saying to me, I can't believe the wondrous and joy of these people and the beauty of these people. You know, they're incredible. And they hold themselves with such dignity and live in such horrendous situations. And they could be a lesson to us all, you know. The Palestinian people really need our support. And, you know, I think people get bored and get angry and get sick of me talking about Palestine. But they don't understand the beauty of these people, the dignity of these people, and the opportunity that it gives us all for world freedom. If we free Palestine, we free the world. it's all connected, and people just can't see that. Again, they're caught up in their rabbit holes, you know. And people will say, oh, Palestine's a rabbit hole. You're just caught up in this Israeli-Palestine. No, I'm not. I'm looking at it as a, on a global stage and seeing, is there some world issue that is right there that can be used to address the world situation? And it can, and Palestine is the issue. You see, like I said, it's an international war crime. And you can, I tried with the Amazon, I tried with all sorts of stuff. You can get into environmental damage and all these sorts of things, and people just, you know, they get lost in their own minds, I suppose. But when it's a humanitarian thing and it's an international war crime that gives you the opportunity to deal with local problems you're having in your area, because all these local problems are all a result of legislation. It's all been enacted by people who are supporting a war crime. So that gives you the opportunity to deal with the fracking and the vaccines and all the stuff that they're doing, because all of this legislation which is allowing it is enacted by people who are supporting a war crime, so therefore they can be arrested under international law and they can be held accountable, you know. I think it's a huge, huge opportunity for all of us to deal with this situation if we can simply open our hearts to the people of Palestine. And I don't know if that answered your question. I kind of went off on a tangent there. But to answer your question, the situation's horrendous and it's getting worse by the day. And if we don't call it out as people and don't start calling out these war criminals that are supporting it, then it's going to deteriorate. And if it deteriorates to the point that Palestine does disappear, then I truly believe that the way of Palestine will be the way of the world, because we didn't pay attention and we didn't grab this opportunity while it's there.
Max, you say that everybody's aware that of what Israel is. What do you think will be the tipping point? Because I see the world, I agree with you, everyone can see Israel for what it is, but I think that the masses, the population of the world, are sort of like a child that's sort of grown too old to believe in Father Christmas, but the dad and mum have not said, oh, Father Christmas doesn't exist, so they go along and play along with the illusion, because they perceive that they're going to get something at the end of it, and they don't want to say, oh, well, there's no Father Christmas, and then I won't get my, you know, my gifts and things like that.
Yeah, well, you know, the problem with Palestine is what it's going to take is for it to come to people's back doors, unfortunately. They see it, it's just, you know, something on the news. It's been going on for 30, 40 years, you know, as long as people can remember, there's been this conflict going on between Israel and Palestine. And it's just something people are sick about hearing. And they're not really going to pay attention. I mean, they're so busy running on the treadmill trying to pay to be alive and collect the paper they need to do that, that they're not really prepared to pay attention to anything until it comes to their backyard. And this is why I say, like in Australia, I welcome the move of the government bringing in mandatory vaccines for pensioners and stuff, because now it's coming to people's backyard. Maybe they'll stand up and say, hey, I've had enough. We won't do this. But then, you know, this is presented in a different way. It's a subtle form of terrorism. It's a subtle form of violence against the individual, mandatory vaccinations. It's not like the open violence that's meted out towards the Palestinian people, but it's the same thing. It's the same thing. It's a right of ownership. Israel is exercising a right of ownership over the people of Palestine with mandatory vaccinations. You've got the government issuing a right of ownership over people in their community. So it's the same thing, and that's really what it's going to take. It's unfortunately, I think, it's going to have to get horrendous in the suburbs. People are going to have to see open violence from their government in their own suburbs until they realise that things are not the way they thought they were. Hopefully, it won't be too late by that point. You know, hopefully, things like mandatory vaccines and the austerity measures and the things they're doing will cause an uprising. You know, and we don't need a violent uprising. I mean, I hope it doesn't come to that, but we need an uprising of some kind, and people need to stand up and call it. I mean, honestly, looking at England, when it came out that David Cameron had sex with the head of a dead pig to join the Billington Boys, I mean, how is this guy still the Prime Minister?
Exactly.
Why haven't people been up in arms about this? It's just ridiculous. How can this sort of stuff be allowed? And just, oh, it's just, they do strange things at these clubs. No, this is not a strange thing. This is sick. This is perverse. This is not the act of a sane mind. If I had to do that to join a club, I think I'd prefer to join a different club. You know? I mean, what's wrong with these people? How can we have people who are so obviously corrupt And so obviously sick and just demented, psychopathic people, people like Hillary Clinton, who's a career criminal, who should be in jail, how on earth is she able to run for president? You know, why can't people see this? I mean, so you look at how absolutely disgraceful this world has become, and the amount of damage we're seeing inflicted around the planet, and then you see this, like David Cameron's still in office, Hillary Clinton's running for president, and you realize that it doesn't matter how much we bring awareness to people, until it comes to their backyard, they're just not going to do anything. So all I can say is bring it on. Bring it on and bring it to people's backyards if that's what it's going to take, because we need an uprising. And people are so caught up in their own little bubble and believing they will survive if they just keep their head down. It's mind-boggling. It really is. The fluoride, the television, the lithium that they spray in the sky, I think it's really had an effect on people. So I just say bring it on, and bring it on as fast as you can, because the more you bring it on, the more you're waking people up, and we need this uprising. We need people to stand up and call it out.
We've got a couple of messages for you from the chat room, Max, and there's a lady called Yvonne, also known as Babushka, in the chat room, and I believe she knows you quite well. And she says, Max is just as nice in real life as he is on radio. But she also asks, what is the view of the Israeli citizens on Palestine, or are they just mind-controlled puppets as well?
Well, look, a lot of them. There's a lot of Jewish people who are very, very supportive of the situation in Palestine, but then there's a lot who aren't. I mean, you've got to look at Bibi Netanyahu. He was elected to office on the platform that Operation Cast Lead didn't go far enough and that he would finish the job, basically go and exterminate everybody in Gaza. That was the platform he was elected to office on. And when he stopped bombing Gaza Strip last year, his popularity plummeted. And it wasn't because of the amount of war crimes that he committed. It's because he stopped bombing them, because he didn't finish the job. So that says a lot. It says a lot for the mentality of the people in Israel. Unfortunately, you know, everything we're told about Israel is backwards. Israel tells us that the Arabs, the Palestinians, are raised to hate Jews. It's the other way around. The Jews are actually raised to hate the Palestinians. Children, I've got photographs of children as young as 5 years old playing with Uzis, you know, being taught to think militarily. They kidnap Palestinian children and treat them like dogs. They're trained that Palestinians are less than dogs, and they must not treat Palestinians with any respect. They must not give them any sympathy or any mercy, because it's an affront to God. I mean, they're taught all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's got me, you know, it really makes me wonder why Christian nations support Israel, because Judaism hates Christ. They think Christ betrayed them, and that he's boiling in a pit of hot excrement in hell at the moment, and he deserved everything that he got and all this sort of stuff. So it's a very, very, you know, supremacist, and it's a very twisted ideology. They're taught the Bible as a history book. As soon as they join preschool, the Bible is introduced to them, not from a religious sense, but as a book of Jewish history. And it's not an accurate history book. I mean, let's face it, it's not a history book. It's a religious tome. You can't be using this as an accurate history book, but they do. And so this is a mentality. When you look at the suppression of the Jews in the Bible, which is a book, I believe, written mainly to exalt the Jews and give them a history, you can see how all this happens. You know, the mentality is sick. You've got the foreign minister saying that you should kill Israeli women and kill Palestinian women and kill pregnant women because they give birth to little snakes who become terrorists. I mean, this is a woman saying this. This is the mentality of the place. And unfortunately, Benjamin Netanyahu is not the most extreme person in the government. If Benjamin Netanyahu was voted out, the person who was voted in would very likely be even worse than Benjamin Netanyahu. So that's the problem that we face, you know. It's a very, very extremist ideology, and you can't really blame them, because they're kind of trained to think and act this way. It's the education, and it's a vicious cycle. But it's interesting. I mean, but like I said, most of the people that are there aren't even actually real Jews. But the overall consensus in Israel is that the Palestinians are dogs and we should exterminate them. But again, it's not all the people that that feel that way. I mean, I get a lot of good information funneled out to me from West Bank by Israelis, by Jewish people. So it certainly isn't the entire country that thinks that way, but it's a good majority of it. Otherwise, it wouldn't get away with what it does, you know.
Yeah, defending itself is probably the... That's like me defending myself from an 18-month-old baby.
Well, yeah. I mean, none of its actions have been defensive. I mean, it was an aggressive state when it founded itself. When Israel was founded and had all these sort of problems, the way they got around it was staging a terror attack in the King David Hotel. And that gave them the excuse to go and ethnically cleanse about 500 Palestinian villages, which caused the whole basis of the problems that we've got now. I mean, everything that we're seeing now, all the crimes and atrocities that come forth on both sides stem from that one original crime. And that one original crime isn't even acknowledged by Israel. They don't even acknowledge the Nakba, the expulsion of all the Palestinian people. They just say, oh, there wasn't anybody here when we arrived. There were just all these nomads roaming around who tried to attack us, and so we had to, you know, shift them out of the country. It wasn't like that at all. It was a major terrorist event at the King David Hotel, which resulted in massive ethnic cleansing, and that is the problem. That's the real problem, you know, and it all stems back to that original crime. And Israel's actions have been aggressive all the way down the line. I mean, it's actions against Lebanon, its actions against Syria, its actions against everybody have been aggressive. But again, it needs the Palestinians there to keep that going. Without the Palestinians there and this ongoing threat of suicide bombers or however they want to package it, then Israel would not be allowed to do what it does. You wouldn't be able to have the Israeli Defense Force, which isn't a defense force, it's an offense force, it's an occupying force. And so, again, they do it with reverse psychology and everything's backwards. You know, all these Palestinians are attacking us all the time. What they're doing is defending themselves against constant Israeli aggression and constant Israeli expansion. When you look at the maps, I mean, look at how the map has changed since 1948. There's almost none of Palestine left anymore, and yet we're told that Israel is defending itself against aggression. It's backwards. It's all backwards. Look at how it's expanded into Syria, into Golan Heights, how it's expanded into Lebanon. And that yet when Lebanon comes and attacks the Jewish bases and the Jewish settlements in Lebanon, the news portrays it as if we've got Hezbollah attacking Israel. But it's not like that. Israel is in Lebanon and Hezbollah are freedom fighters trying to kick these invaders out of their country. You know, but because these are who control the media, we get these spun versions of these stories. But every action that Israel has done since being founded, and even its founding itself, has been an aggressive action. There's been no defense in there at all, you know.
Max, we've got a question from Ken, who I mentioned while we were off air before the show, that Ken would love to jam with you sometime, anytime you can meet up. Great guitarist, and he's recorded a few songs for us that we play on here, like kind of cover versions of classics, but he writes his own own lyrics, and they really fit well with what we're doing here. But Ken picked up on the phrase that you used a little while back, anti-Semitic, and he asked a simple question, which I fully expected: what are Semites?
Well, that's a good question. Semites are Middle Eastern people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Semites, Palestinians are Semites.
Yeah.
You know, Arab people, you've got, you know, your olive skin, brown eyes, black hair. These are Semitic people. So you've got to ask, how is anti-Semitism, hatred of Jews, how does that work when most of the Jews that are in Israel are not Semitic? They're non-Semitic Jews. They're Khazars from the Europe area of Europe between the Black Sea and the Caspian, the Caucasus. So they're not even Semitic. But the word anti-Semitism is an invented word that was invented by Zionists to mask the activity of the Zionist regime, of the Israeli regime. You know, like anything Israel does, you can't criticize because you get called anti-Semitic. I mean, is there a word that can be used for criticizing Chinese people? is there a word that can be used for criticizing white people or black people or people from Paraguay, you know, South American people? What is the word if you don't like Latinos? What is the word if you don't like whites? They just call it racism, whatever, you know. But with the Jewish people, it's anti-Semitic. There is no other race or religion or creed which has a word used to describe dislike for that particular race. Why does that word exist? Where did it come from? And when you tie that word in with the Holocaust, oh no, these terrible people who were so downtrodden and they tried to exterminate them all, and if you hate them, here's a word that we use for it. This whole thing is a construct. Even the term Holocaust denial. Denial is a loaded term, but denial, how is it denial? How is researching something denial? But if you research the Holocaust at all, it's called Holocaust denial. If you research science, it isn't called science denial. If you research anything, it isn't called, you know, denial. If you research the life of Christ, it isn't called religious denial. If you research, you know, biology, it isn't called biological denial. So how come is it if you research the Holocaust, if you find any questions at all, it's called Holocaust denial? How did this loaded term come about? Why is it this one race of people has all of these loaded terms and all these words to describe these things, like anti-Semitism? Where did this word come from? What does it mean? You know, Semites are, like I said, the Middle Eastern people. Really, the actions of Israel are some of the most anti-Semitic actions I've ever seen from any government, because all Israel has done is go and stomp on all the Semitic races around it. Look at Syria. These are Semites in Syria. In all of these Middle Eastern people are all Semites. So you've got this huge group of non-Semitic people in the middle of it all who are carrying out all these atrocities, and if you speak out against them, you're called anti-Semitic. Again, it's backwards. Everything's backwards, you know. These people aren't Semites. To be a Semite does not mean to be practice the faith of Judaism. It means to be Middle Eastern. You know, big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Vince just posted in the chat room, climate denier would be another example, yeah.
Exactly, denial. See, when you use the word denial, then it's a foregone conclusion that this science is founded. I mean, it's like saying, you know, you don't need air to breathe. Okay, that's atmosphere denial or something. I mean, you know, it's a weird thing. You know, using the term denial, climate denial is saying, yes, we are causing climate change. Yes, all the science is right. And if you don't believe it, then you're denying reality, you know. And it's a loaded term, and that's why they use the word denial. It's the same as using the word theory after the word conspiracy, you know, conspiracy theory. Because people automatically associate it with a theory. None of the conspiracies could be real, could they? There isn't an actual conspiracy. It's all theory, isn't it? You know, so, and yeah, denial, you know, climate denial, Holocaust denial. I mean, what's the worst Holocaust in history that we can find is really the Holocaust, the death of 66 million Christians at the hands of Bolshevik Jews. So, you know, if we really want to start getting into Holocausts, and even the word Holocaust, I mean, this is a loaded term as well. Holocaust means burnt offering, and yet we're told that they all died in gas chambers. Very, very strange. But of course, in the beginning, we were told that as the trains pulled up, they all just threw them onto bonfires. But, you know, none of the facts stack up as far as the Holocaust goes either. In fact, none of the facts of World War II stack up properly. And when you realize that history is written by the winners, you realize that we've been sold a lie, you know. And all these loaded terms are being introduced. This is all just NLP. It's just all neuro-linguistic programming. That's what the term denial is about. That's what anti-Semitism is about. It's all just programming, loaded terms.
Yeah, it's to do with subliminal association as well. Anybody who's called a climate denier, sorry, that has a subliminal association with the Holocaust denier, so... It's all in the language and how it's used, and it's very clever, like we were saying beforehand. It's a huge, massive net that they've got us in, and it's quite a difficult thing to find your way out of.
Well, yeah, it is, but people are finding their way out of it now. I think people are seeing it for what it is. It's just seeing through the haze, and if you can step above it all and just put it back to a human perspective, this is what I've been saying to people, you know, at the top of all, really, it's just people. You know, all of this other stuff, it's all fiction. All these loaded terms, all this stuff, you know, ultimately it's just people. And if we can get through that haze and realize that It's just people here. No one has any more value than anybody else. Doesn't matter what religion or creed or class you belong to. Everybody has worth. Everybody has value. And we don't actually have to do what other people say, especially if what they're telling us to do is go and kill other people, go and drop bombs on other people, go and destroy our environment, go and drop depleted uranium everywhere. You know, we've got to start calling all this out and getting through all this haze, getting through all these little clouds of vision that put to keep us separated from each other and separated from ourselves. You know, it's time. It's time we wake up to this and step above the cloud. I really think now is time, and I think that's what this year is going to be. I really do. I think this is going to be a year of change. They're trying to lock us down, but it's so in everybody's face now. And people are beginning to pull the veil away from their eyes, and they're beginning to see it a little clearer. So I don't think they're going to get away with it. I really don't.
Mm. There was a book that kind of gave us a warning about this, and I was very thankful. One of the few useful things that I read when I was at school, and that was a book by George Orwell called 1984, apparently written in 1948, and it talks about doublespeak and so many classic examples of what we hear now, like bombing for peace. And even when I grew up, the word gay meant happy and jolly. Now, you know, that word's been usurped and it's been made to mean something which it doesn't really mean.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they've done this with everything. They usurp everything and change it, change the meaning of all of it. War is peace, you know. That's the way they do it. And yeah, George Orwell, 1984. I mean, what we're heading for is kind of a mixture of 1984 and Brave New World.
Mm-hmm.
And wrap them both together and then give them some steroids, and that's kind of where we're going. Brave New World, Aldous Huxley, where people were fed soma and given like this drug to make them all compliant and happy, and people were bred into their class and they never came above their class. And this is kind of where we're going as well. You know, and with the doublespeak and the Ministry of Truth and everything in 1984, that's absolutely where we are. He said that he would have changed that book, and it's the same with Brave New World. He said that he put it 100 years in the future. He said he'd put it like 50 years in the future or something like it. You know, and that it was not anywhere near as much as what it's actually going to be. You know, he didn't go far enough in Brave New World, because that's where we're heading, unfortunately, through the smart grid and through everything they're putting in place. And that's why it's so imperative that people get their head out of their rabbit holes for now. You know, like if you really find out if you really want to know if the Earth is flat, all this sort of stuff, establish some freedom. You know, because pretty soon you're not going to have the freedom to be able to do this research. Pretty soon, when there's smart grids in place, you're not going to be able to escape from this system in any way. Even if you've got an alternate community, you're not going to be able to live there effectively, because you're going to have to participate in this system in some way. And when it all goes smart, then you're going to have to be putting energy into the system to get energy out of the system. So we've really got to pay attention to where this is all going. And, now is the time for people to stand up. It's got to be now. It's got to be this year or next year. And there's certain things we can do. There are certain movements that are happening. Like, please do join Full Circle Project. There's Count Our Keys World Citizen Initiative he's trying to put together as well. That could make a difference. There's all sorts of things that can make a difference as long as people are prepared to go out there and get involved themselves. Otherwise, yeah, it's going to be 1984, only worse, and it's like I said, 1984 and Brave New World's wrapped together, only 10 times worse if we don't pay attention.
Yeah, an interesting use of that doublespeak there just being mentioned by Johnny. He says they've also done this with the word sovereignty. You know, the word sovereignty is supposedly all about crown and queen and all that garbage. When it's individual sovereignty is the really important thing there, isn't it?
Well, yeah. But again, yeah, if they're outlawing sort of the use of this term, if you will. Like even in Australia, people who call themselves sovereign citizens are being classed as anti-government extremists and people who are persons of interest, you know. And if you're a person of interest in Australia now, you can be arrested without charge or trial based on no evidence, just on suspicion that you may be about to do something at some stage, maybe, sometime, you know. They don't need any evidence. They just need suspicions. Suspect you of being an anti-government extremist. And all you have to do is call yourself sovereign to do that. So this is the problem that we're having, even with these words, with the whole free man movement as well. I mean, there's been no remedy in the free man movement. There never has been. It's been useful in exposing the fiction. But I've seen a lot of people get in trouble with the free man movement, trying to take the government on. And you can't establish individual freedom anyway, not while the collective is still in the prison. You're just stepping out of a little cage into a bigger cage, you know. You won't be free until the system is no longer there. You know, you're not free if you lose the name. You're free when they stop asking you for the name, you know. So that's not going to happen until we call the system out and rein these criminals in for what they are, call them out for what they are, you know. And to me, it's so obvious now. We've got so many things that they've done, and it's so obvious how corrupt this system is. I just don't know why people can't see it. I mean, I don't know why people keep going down their rabbit holes. And when these criminals enact legislation that ties them up in red tape, they walk that line, they walk that path. Why not just call it out and say, how do you have the right to do that when you're a war criminal? And you know, but the reason we don't get anywhere with this is because we have such disunited communities, of course. You know, everyone's judging each other by the size of their front door and what sort of car they drive and what they look like and what they wear. You know, no one's prepared to actually put their stuff down with everybody else and just unite as one strong communal voice and stand in respect for each other, realize that no one has any more value than anyone else, and just stand up and call it out, you know. So that's when we're going to see some change. So hopefully it's getting to that. Hopefully it's coming to people's face so much and they're realizing there is no remedy in even thinking that you're sovereign. It's no remedy. Now, you are sovereign. Everybody's sovereign. But there's no remedy in going down that legal pathway, not unless you have respect for people around you, you know, and you're all prepared to just stand up and speak your mind and call things for what they are. That's how we're going to bring about some change, you know.
Mm-hmm. We've got Vin agreeing with you there, Max, saying that baby steps are what we need and to share them with as many people as possible. And he believes that growing food and sourcing clean water are number one priorities for all of us.
Well, yeah, it is, absolutely. And it is baby steps, but we've got to take them pretty quickly because we're running out of time. The thing is, you know, there's been I like to put it this way, there's been a series of steps that have brought us to this point, and we need to stop it here and then reverse the sequence to take us back to a point of sovereignty or self-governance. We've got to be sensible about it. We can't say, oh, we want complete anarchy and complete freedom right now. We've got to realize that there is a series of steps to take us back there. A lot of the world is not responsible enough to deal with autonomy, to deal with self-responsibility, to deal with anarchy or freedom. They're just not responsible enough to. So we've got to find a mechanism that will stop this system in its tracks now, stop it from, you know, waging these wars, stop it from all these mandatory vaccines, stop them from bringing in the slavery system, militarizing our police anymore, and find a way of rolling it all back. And the first step really is to call these criminals out, these criminals that are running this world out for what they are. That has to be the first step. And what's preventing us from that is unity. As I said, it's the lack of respect we have for each other. So that's why I've always brought it to that type of grassroots movement whereby I've always said, like, some of the best things you can do is if you're baking biscuits, bake some extra ones to get to know your neighbours. Just get to know your neighbours. Get to know the people around you and have a strong community around you, because that's where it starts. Once you've got that strong community and that respect, then you can stand up. You can call out any local council, any state government, any federal government. You can do it once you have that communal respect. But if we're going to continue to be divided and fight amongst each other, we're never going to get anywhere. You know, once we've got that communal respect, we can stand up and call these politicians out, and we can stop the system in its tracks, simple non-compliance. But we've got to have the communal respect to do it. And that's a big thing that's happened. Why I'm so disappointed with the flat earthers is because that has caused that respect to disappear within the alternate media. Now, that has even turned into an us or them mentality. And if you want to research flat earth, that's great, but don't belittle who don't think that it's the be all end all and that is the only way to go. You know, we've got to be prepared to listen to each other and to respect each other's research and to realize that we're all ultimately fighting the same battle here. So, You know, if your research is causing animosity towards people, then put it down for now, or perhaps look at it a different way. Because, you know, if, while we're arguing amongst each other, we're doing their work for them. That's what they want. And that's why I'm so suspect on the way this research has been presented. I put out a video saying that it's a psyop, not because I'm saying the Earth is round, because, like I said, I'm agnostic on the whole thing. I don't have enough evidence to go either way. It's a debate that's been raging for thousands of years. I put out that psyop video to, just to demonstrate that the way the research is being played is it's being played as a divisionist psyop, because it's a big us or them mentality that's come with it. And that is exactly what we don't need at the moment. That is the worst thing we can possibly do, is to divide the response to this system. And that's what it has done. And that's the unfortunate thing about it. You know, the people who believe the Earth is a ball need to respect people who believe it's flat. It's just an idea. And it's the same with the other way. If you believe the Earth is flat, you've got to respect those who believe it's a ball. It doesn't mean they're Satan-worshipping dog-eaters, like some people are saying. This is literally what some people are saying. If you believe the Earth is a ball, you're a demon-worshipping dog-eater. That's what they're saying. And this is counterproductive. How is this valid research? How is this a valid thing to say to anybody? You know, it does not help things. You know, if the Earth is flat, and if you believe it's a ball, you're a moron. That does not help anything. You know, and the Earth is a ball. If you believe it's flat, you're a moron. That doesn't help anything either. You know, the fact is that we don't know. Everything that we're told is told to us by other people, and unless you've gone and experienced things for yourself, you don't know. The only thing you can be an authority on is yourself. That's the only thing I'm an authority on. And really, as far as myself goes, I'm still figuring that bit out. So, you know, we've got to put all this stuff down and respect each other and respect each other's research and stand together to make some change, and then we will see some change happen. You know, but without respect, it's not going to go anywhere.
Thanks, Max. And I've just noticed, as you finished there, the first hour has flown by. The time always flies when we're on the show, but I think that's the quickest hour I've ever experienced in my life. Would now be a good time to put a quick tune on so we can all grab a brew and have a quick wee break?
That would be great.
Okay. I'm very excited today because I've come across a guy that someone pointed me to the other day, and he sent me a tune which I'm going to play now. And the guy's in the chat room is by Philip Ray James, and it's called Notice of Mistake. Thank you, Philip. Back in a few minutes.
We require a call to record.
And welcome back to Raconteurs News, bringing you untwisted, unsweetened news on peoplesinternetradio.com. And it's a bit of a special day today. We've got Max Egan on with us. Are you still there, Max?
I certainly am. You'd be surprised the amount of people that say Eigen.
Yeah, what
people is that, people that know me quite well, that listen to this show, and they're big fans, and they have me on this show, and they still say Max Eigen.
I've listened to so many different pronunciations, but I had to listen to quite a few to hear you say it yourself before I knew which way to pronounce it correctly.
Yeah, it's Egan. Mm-hmm. It's actually the original Irish spelling of Ian.
Oh, right. Well, we had Barry Trower on talking about harmful effects of microwaves a couple of times recently, and I actually asked him, how do we pronounce your name? And he says, well, I won't give a monkey's, pronounce it how you like.
Yeah, well, it's kind of the way it is, really.
So, yeah, thanks so much for joining us today, Max, because I know you're a bit jet-lagged, having only just arrived in Peru, but you're doing great, mate.
Yeah, it's all good. It takes a little while to acclimatise, you know. You get here, the humidity is really thick. You know, it's really different to Australia. We had not much of a summer over there this year in Australia, so I've come over here and it's very thick and it's very humid, and my body clock's like 15 hours out, so I'm still a little vague with my answers, so I apologise about that.
Not at all, mate. Well, you say about not really having a summer in Australia. Over here in the UK, there's been nothing to speak of. The old joke about the English summertime, three fine days and a thunderstorm, we actually had that on the first weekend in July, I think, and that was about it. That was all we got this year.
Yeah. Well, it's been weird. I mean, apparently it's hot over there now in Australia, but when I left, I mean, I was still sleeping with a doona in January, which is unheard of. I should have a fan on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that was really weird. So there's something strange going on. Maybe it's the spraying in the sky. I don't know, but there's definitely something strange going on.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hear so much about chemtrails, and I've watched them. We live in a first floor apartment, so we tend to look at the sky more than we look at the ground. And, you know, I remember as a child, clouds never ever formed in straight lines, and you didn't see crosses of clouds in the sky. So there's something bloody strange going on, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's admitted that they're spraying as well, and you guys really cop it over there. I couldn't believe last time I was in London. Like, every time I go over there, I look at the skies, and it's just mind-blowing. The first day I arrived, I remember I was down the park with Ken O'Keefe, and there's a photograph of us where I'm just standing there, and we've got our hands up looking at the sky, and it's just insane. I'd never seen anything like it when I went to London. But, I mean, Europe's the same. I think a lot of the stuff they're spraying, I think they're using lithium and all sorts of stuff, which is messing with people's memories as well. You know, people can't sort of remember things back a month or two ago, mm-hmm. and lithium will do that. So there's a lot going on with the spraying. It's one of the biggest problems we face. It's such an open conspiracy, and it's right in everybody's faces, and it's the most difficult thing to convince people of. Yeah, it's amazing because it's right there. You know, I mean, clouds just don't do that, and jets just don't leave contrails all the time. Every time they take off, they don't leave contrails. This is, you know, it takes special atmospheric conditions to create a contrail, and we're seeing contrails off these jets everywhere. So this is just not normal. These aren't contrails. They last. They spread out. They cover the sky. They're weird things are going on with the weather, and I think a lot of it is from the spraying.
Well, I remember as a child, if you held your hand up at arm's length, and if a plane, well, you never ever saw a plane leaving a contrail that was much longer than the width of your finger. Now, they go right across the sky, and then, crisscrossing all over the place. You've got a big checkerboard in the skies. And you mentioned...
they last and they spread out. And this isn't normal. This isn't the way condensation works. They put out all this stuff now about, oh, yes, the science of persistent contrails. It's all pseudoscience. It's not real.
Mm.
You know, condensation is condensation. It's ice. It's as simple as that. So, yeah, if it's not dissipating, then it's not ice. It's chemicals.
Mm. So do you think that that the chemtrails could be responsible for people actually taking what is a cartoon that is called, they call it politics? It has these cartoon characters like Donald Trump, and over here in Britain we've got Boris Johnson. All these people are just basically cartoon characters. And do you think that perhaps these chemtrails are having an effect on people, that they're losing a grip on what reality really is?
Well, you never know. They could be putting anything in there. Like I said, I'm pretty certain they're putting lithium in there, which affects people's memory. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I think it's a multi-platform delivery system. You can put anything you want in there, vaccines, whatever. I mean, who knows what they're putting in there.
And so what do you make of Donald Trump?
Oh, he's an idiot. He works for Hillary Clinton. I mean, he's an idiot. I mean, really, is this the best America's got? I mean, honestly, 300 million people. And what? You got Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton, Jeb Bush. This is the cream of the crop, is it? I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. Donald Trump, I mean, he's an idiot. He's a right-wing fascist. He supports Israel. He's a businessman. I mean, he's the last person you want running a country. He's a fool, you know?
Well, it's just like a Punch and Judy show, isn't it, Max? My old mate Tom, who used to do the radio shows with, he used to say elections are a bit like... giving you a choice. Do you want a punch in the face or a kick in the balls?
Well, yeah, that's what it is. I mean, it's a joke. It's an absolute joke. And the fact that all these millionaires you've got running for office, and I mean, warmongering millionaires, why on earth would people vote for any of these people? I mean, it's a joke. I mean, the fact that Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton are running in this election just shows what a farce the whole American political system is. You know, it's just a criminal empire, the whole American government. It's one of the most successful criminal organizations that's ever existed, you know, and these, the fact that these people are running for president proves it. I mean, it's a disgrace. It's a farce. It's not even a B-grade movie anymore. It's like a C-grade movie.
No, the ridiculous farce that I saw this week, there was an article posted saying that Hillary had stepped down as a presidential candidate. Then within about 4 minutes, the chairman of the Benghazi inquiry announced that they dropped the inquiry. And then about 9 minutes later, Hillary said, only joking. And then the chairman of the Benghazi inquiry said, that tells us everything we need to know about Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, they're all the same, aren't they? They're just career politicians. They just—that's all they're bred for. I think they're perhaps just as much victims as we are. These politicians that seem to be bred, you know, these upper class people here in Britain that all go to Eton and they're all educated in the same manner and taught the same principles of leadership and how to rule people with an iron rod.
Well, yeah, and there's all sorts of secret societies and pedophile groups and all sorts of stuff, and you find that a lot of the kids that grow up in these families have all been molested and they've all gone through this other life that we don't actually know exists. So most of these people are compromised anyway. That's why they get into these positions that they get into. It's like with David Cameron, you know, having to have sex with the head of a dead pig in order to become part of the Billington Boys. So this is the type of sociopathic mentality that gets into these clubs and gets into these positions of power. If you're not prepared to do this sort of stuff, you don't get into the club. Therefore, you don't ever get to be in a position where you might become prime minister. And it's the same with American politics as well. I mean, all these Bilderberg clubs and, you know, the Bohemian Club and all these different groups. You know, you've got to be part of the inner circle and be taken into the inner circle and be groomed for the position to get anywhere in Western politics, you know. There might be some little independent somewhere or some state who just gets elected because he's a good guy, but he won't ever get to a position of any real power or real authority because you've got to be part of the inner club. You've got to be a sociopath. You've got to have dirt on you. So you can't expect any honesty or remedy to ever come from the mainstream political arena. You know, it's not going to come until, you know, the people start standing up themselves and calling it out. Stop participating in this system. You know, don't vote for criminals. Don't vote for the best of a bad bunch. You know, refuse to participate. You know, if there's not integrity in it, then refuse to participate. That's what we need to do. But again, you know, we won't get anywhere unless we've got communities. We need to have this strong communal response. So we need to have strong communal ties in all of our areas. So, again, the best thing you do is get to know your neighbours, start spreading information, and not participate in the system. But not only not participate, I mean, call it out. We've got to start calling it out, calling these people out for what they are and asking them to show cause why they shouldn't be held accountable for their actions, you know. Now, I'm of the firm belief that every problem we've got on the planet comes from legislation governments have put in place. So, you know, we've got to start addressing that and realising that we don't have to do what these people say. And America, I mean, I don't know how America is ever going to survive itself if you're going to have people like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton running for president. I mean, she isn't even a career politician. She's a career criminal. She's absolutely horrendous, some of the things this woman has done. She's got so much blood on her hands. The way she cackled when Gaddafi got raped and murdered on TV and, you know, went in and destroyed Libya. And Libya was the most prosperous country in all of Africa. And interesting, isn't it, as well, that Gaddafi said that if you destroy Libya, we're the basket, we're the catcher's mitt. We catch all of the refugees that come up through Sudan and all the refugees that want to get into Europe. They come as far as Libya, and that's as far as they go. If you destroy Libya, then within 3 to 5 years, you're going to find Europe flooded with refugees. Isn't it interesting that he said that and that his prophecies now come true? Of course, it's all come true by design. They've pushed it that way. But again, if Libya was there, the only refugees we would see in Europe would be Syrian refugees, the way it was supposed to be. We wouldn't have all of these Sudanese and African refugees coming in and mixing in with them, you know, with fake Syrian passports that they're picking up from whatever crime gang is running whatever area of Libya they went through now, because that's all Libya is. It's a absolute basket case. It's full of terrorist groups and factions and crime organizations, and it's just horrendous what's going on in Libya now, and it was one of the most prosperous countries in all of Africa. So all of this has happened because they took out Gaddafi and because they went in and bombed Syria. I mean, that's what's caused the whole situation in Europe. So it's just interesting that Gaddafi's prophecy came true so quickly.
And Gaddafi was, wasn't he going to change the currency that he used to sell his oil or buy his oil?
He was going to change it all to the African dinar, which was going to be a gold-backed currency. They were going to do all their oil trading in the African dinar. So what they wanted to do was just basically freeze all of his bank accounts so he couldn't. But then when they realized that he had $70 billion in gold and silver reserves anyway, and he could keep the country going as long as he wanted with that, they realized that the only way they could stop this from happening was to go and obliterate the country, because basically if Africa had started trading in the dinar, then that would have meant the end of the petrodollar, which would have meant the end of the U.S. stranglehold over global currency. So that's why they bombed Libya. And that's all actually come out from Hillary's emails as well.
Sorry. Somebody put in the chat room that Trump was probably, it was probably an ego thing for Donald Trump to run for president. Now, I'm of the opinion that ego is one of the biggest problems that the human race faces. To me, ego is like a cancer to your soul, because it gets in the way of everything. Nobody wants to admit that they're wrong about anything because of their ego. If we got rid of ego, I think that we'd probably be halfway to getting to ending the world's problems.
Well, you know, ego is one thing, but false ego manufacturing a false threat. This is what you get from people who use their ego in the wrong way. I mean, you need ego. Without ego, you wouldn't put your clothes on when you get up. You'd just lay in bed and take your crap in bed and stay there all day. It wouldn't matter. You know, you wouldn't comb your hair when you go out. You'd look like a mess. So you need ego to, it's part of who you are, but false ego is when you place yourself in a position where you believe you're superior to others, or, you know, and this is really because you perceive a false threat from others. You know, if you see others as being threatening to yourself, then it makes you want to have more. It makes you want to become someone like Donald Trump, because you're immersed in your false ego. It's not real ego, it's false ego. You know, and this is the problem. And our society is designed to manufacture this false ego and nurture this false ego in people, to find that little spark of sociopathy if it's in there, and to nurture it, you know. And that's one of the big problems. So, yeah, I mean, Donald Trump, I mean, I really believe Donald Trump works for Hillary Clinton. I really do. I think everything he's done has benefited Hillary Clinton. I think he's a clown. I don't think he'll get to be president. I think when it all comes down to the wire, it'll probably be someone like Jeb Bush who gets put in. Wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I know he's a back runner at the moment, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's who gets in. Just because when it all comes down to the voting booth, you're going to look at, I mean, Hillary's a basket case and Trump's a clown. So as much as it's entertainment for everybody, I don't think that when it comes down to the wire, I don't think anyone's going to put down their vote for them. And even if they do, I mean, it's all digital now anyway. They'll just flip the machine and they'll figure out who they want, and I think it'll probably be Jeb Bush. And he'll just be the silent person who came from the outside, and everyone will be wondering, and, well, look at Jeb, you know, we didn't even think he was going to get anywhere, and rah, rah, rah. But, I mean, you couldn't have Hillary running the country. It'd be a mess. She'd just be stealing everything she could, waging as much war as she could, and just cackling her way around the planet. I mean, it'd be, and Donald Trump, I mean, what would that be with Donald Trump as president? It'd be like Spinal Tap or something. I mean, yeah, it'd be a joke, really. Can you imagine it? Can you imagine Donald Trump in the Oval Office being president? I mean, no way. I can't see that ever happening. If it does, Well, I guess the Mandela effect's real and I live in an alternate reality or something. So, I think it'll be Jeb Bush that gets in personally.
Well, you mentioned about Hillary being a career criminal. I mean, from the information that's available out of the history of the Bush family, pretty similar there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The Clinton family and the Bush family are joined at the hip. It's like the Bush family are the big crime bosses, and the Clinton family are the lackeys and the, you know, run around, do their dirty work for them. Yeah, they're all the one, part of the one dynasty. They're all part of the same club. I mean, the amount of, deaths that have been around the Clinton family, the people that have mysteriously died around Bill and Hillary Clinton, mm-hmm. The amount of drug trafficking that came in through Arkansas Airport when Bill Clinton was governor of Arkansas, there's so much, you know, to tie these people to so many bad things and so many bad dealings, and to tie them all to the Bush family as well. So, yeah, it's all the one big crime family, I think.
Well, for anyone who's not familiar with the drug trafficking at MENA Airport, Arkansas, I can suggest they just do a little search on the name Barry Seal, and there's a lot of information on that one.
Yeah, he did a lot of heroin trafficking and stuff through that airport when he was governor, and there's a lot to tie him to it as well. And I think what he did when he got to be president, he hang around playing saxophone and having sex with interns. I mean, what a joke that was, you know.
I think. Bill Hicks actually summed up the alleged democratic system with the two parties when he talked about a puppet show. You know, guy on stage with two glove puppets, and one saying this, the other saying that, and then somebody in the audience says, "Hang on, that guy's got his hand up the arse of both puppets." There you go.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. They're all bought and paid for. Yeah, we get to elect people, but we don't get to select who we elect. And that's the problem. They're all selected for us, and they're all bought and paid for before they're put into that position. So that's something people need to take into account. I mean, the elections are a joke. They're theatre for the masses. They give, like George Carlin said, they give people the illusion of choice. And really, you don't have a choice. You have owners. And until we figure that out, end up a caller, it's not going to change. Right?
Mm-hmm. We've got an awful lot of listeners to PIR that are in Ireland, Max, and Ireland, to me, just kind of watching, does seem to be very key to what's happening in the world, and the Irish people have been massively repressed by the British Crown for centuries now. Have you got an angle on that?
Look, I think there's a lot to Ireland. I think Ireland has a pretty unique history.
Mm-hmm.
There's even people like Tazarin who say the roots of civilization come from Ireland. He could be right. You never know. But the Irish people, I mean, they've been so brutalized by the British government, and they should be able to identify with the Palestinians more than anyone, just about. Now, I love the Irish people. I do. I love the way they just say, no, we're not going to do it. You know, it's just great, and you can't mess with them. They just don't back down. So, they've been brutalized. I mean, the Irish Holocaust is another Holocaust that doesn't get talked about. You know, the potato famine that we're told that it was. No, it wasn't. It was England coming and stealing all their food at gunpoint. You know, that's what happened. We don't hear about any of that. So, yeah, I mean, the Irish people, are a wonderful people, a staunch people. And I think that we could all take a lesson from them. You know, the Irish people, the Irish parliamentarian who stood up and basically called out Israel recently as well. I mean, it's great to see the staunchness of these people. So, yeah, good luck to them. I love the Irish people. Great place, too. I went there, visited Newgrange. Got a friend there, Ruth Kelly. Wonderful, wonderful woman. Absolutely gorgeous, wonderful woman. I hope she's listening. I know she's a friend of Vin's. And beautiful, very wonderful hospitality. Took me to a place and had a bunch of people come over, and Thomas Sheridan come over, and Vin come over, and we sat around and had a wonderful meal. And she took me to Newgrange and showed me all the sights of the place. It was great. So I've got a very, very soft, fond spot for Ireland.
Oh, that's fabulous. I wish I could have been there at that, Max. That sounds like a fantastic time. We've just got a rather humorous comment being posted by Johnny Meath in the chat room. He said, I could never understand how frogs and pigs mated, but then Cameron came along.
Well, yeah, it's a wonder. That really does explain it, frogs and pigs mating. That really is David Cameron. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Well, he does look an awful lot like a Cabbage Patch doll as well, doesn't he?
He does, he does. He's more than reminiscent of Miss Piggy. So,
I'm not familiar with...
What sort of day you're having when your head gets chopped off, you're now just the head of a pig, and then what happens?
Yeah, that's a bit of a low point in anybody's life or death, I think.
But right, we've got about half an hour left, haven't we? We've got about half an hour left.
That's right, mate.
Yeah, I just wanted to sort of finish when we do the last half an hour of the show. What are you optimistic about? What are you seeing around that is making you feel that there is some hope for, you know, there is some hope for us all, and that there's the optimism that perhaps things are going to change?
Well, it's the awakening that I'm seeing in people. I'm seeing people that I didn't think would wake up to the fact that the government doesn't have their best interests at heart. I'm seeing these people wake up to that now. The problem is not many people know what to do about it, but there are things we can do. There's things like the World Citizen Initiative that Ken's talking about. There's the Full Circle Project. There's things we can do if we can unite as a community. I think people are seeing it in your face now. People we wouldn't think would wake up as seeing that something is terribly wrong. So we can use that as you know, it's great. I mean, and all these people that are asleep, all the sleeping masses as well, I mean, they all think the legal fiction's real. They all think the legal system's real. So, again, we've got opportunities, things such like as Gaza Strip. We can put this in people's faces and they can see that there is a legal mechanism that we can use to get ourselves out of this mess. You know, I'm seeing all sorts of things to make me feel positive. I'm seeing a massive amount of people waking up. I'm seeing a massive amount of people who want to be involved. And I'm seeing the politicians running scared. I really am. I mean, the fact that they're ramping up so many wars, the fact that they're bringing all this legislation, all the stuff they're trying to do to lock us down, they're doing this because they're scared and they're stumbling. Oh, shit. Just got bitten by an insect. I'm in the Amazon. That's what happens.
Ooh.
But I'm seeing the powers that be stumbling, and this is causing them to make mistakes, and so more and more people are waking up because of it. So, yeah, I think we've got a lot to be positive about. I really do. You know, as I said earlier, they bring in all this corrupt legislation, and I welcome it because it's putting it in people's faces, and people are now realizing that if they don't stand up, it's just going to get worse. They can't keep their head in the sand anymore. They've actually got to get involved. So I think we're going to see more and more people doing that. So, yeah, I think we've got a lot to be positive about. I really do.
Do you think the answers lie in doing things in the local area, in your locality, where you can actually physically do things? Do you think that's where... And then sort of lots and lots of individual small local communities, and then we come together?
Yeah, I really do. I think that if we can form these support groups and action groups and start addressing our local councils, and like, you could go to council meetings and things and just stand up and ask the right questions, but do it eloquently, do it politely, and back them into a corner in the right way using their own legal fiction. You know, ask them to show cause. Always ask questions, you know. If there's legislation that's been put in place by local council which is causing hardship, then get a group together and go to the council and address the problem. Ask them to show cause why they shouldn't be held accountable for the hardship they've caused. And don't address the council, address the people within the council, the people who signed off on the legislation, because that's the problem that we have. You know, we're always addressing government or council or whatever. When, you know, it's a cloud, it's an organisation, you can't get any remedy there. You've got to address the people within it. And I think people are seeing that now. There's been so much stuff coming out now that people can see how the system works now. They can see that it's just this paper-based reality that's been created, and they can see a way through it if they can find their own humanity and step into it. So that's the go, I think. I mean, local groups, and with Full Circle Project, you can find these local groups, and you can form meetings and have meetings in the area, and then whatever action you're taking, you can post it and share it with people and have a look through and see what action other people are taking and possibly mirror that in your own community. And always address the abuse of office that's created the problem, because all the problems that we're facing all come from legislation. So this is an abuse of office. If people that we're electing to positions of management are using that position to give themselves powers that they don't have and abusing the office that they hold to put people in a state of hardship, then this is something we can call. And if we have everybody calling out abuse of office, the people who are addressing the fracking, the people who are addressing the vaccinations, the people who are addressing the austerity measures, whatever it is in your local community that is an issue for the community, it's a result of abuse of office. It's a result of a politician abusing that office. If you've got suddenly all these different grass fires and all these different small groups all calling out this same thing from all around the world and all around the country, you're going to find the politicians start paying attention. They're going to realize that we're actually coming for them now. We're not coming for the organization of government or the cloud of council. We're coming for them, the people within those organizations that sign off on the legislation that creates these problems. And we've got respect for each other, you know. It's so important for, you know, I've said one of the most important things anybody can do is to get to know the people around you in your community and develop respectful relationships with these people so that you can all stand up as a strong communal voice. Now, I've been saying this to people for 8 years, 9 years on the radio show. Now, this is what we have to do. Once we've got this strong communal voice, they've got nowhere to go. You know, they have to back down in the face of it. So, you know, that is the best thing you can do. I mean, sure, write letters and write letters to the bigwigs and make noise in the high places as well. But get a strong support group in your own community and get action on the ground in your own community and push it forward in that way. And when you get results, share it with people so they can see what's going on, because that empowers them and it inspires them. And that's what we need. We need inspirational people doing inspirational things on the ground in their own community and sharing it with everybody else.
Absolutely, Max. And that reminds me of the time when I lived out in Spain myself and my neighbours were trying to teach me a little bit of Spanish. And I must apologise because it's a little bit rusty, but one of the phrases that always stuck in my mind is poco a poco se puedes hacer un castillo, which as far as I'm aware means little by little you can build a castle.
Yeah, exactly, you can. But it's got to start on the ground, you know. There's so many people, you know, they become aware of the problems and they become internet junkies and they start researching the problems and looking at all the bad stuff happening. And then they're listening to their favorite newscasters waiting for someone to actually tell them that we've got the solution now, it's all going to work and you don't have to do anything, you're all going to be saved, you know. And it's not like that. You know, once you become aware of the information and become aware of the situation that we're in, sure, spread the information, but don't just listen to radio shows and think that suddenly someone's going to come up with this wonderful idea that's going to save us all. We've all got to participate. You know, everybody is capable of having an idea, and every problem that we've got, it all comes from an idea that somebody had, and we're all capable of having these ideas. You know, you have an idea and you voice it and it resonates with people, and it spreads out and it becomes reality for the rest of the world. And it was all based on one person's idea. Every problem that we've got ultimately came from an idea that somebody had. Every good thing that we've ever done came from an idea that somebody had. So don't think that you're incapable of having these ideas. We are all capable of having a world-changing idea, you know, but we just don't believe it can be us. We think these ideas will come, but they won't come from us. They'll come from big people, more important people. And we'll be able to listen to a radio show and think that, and hear that we've been saved one day. But it may be as simple as you going out and meeting your neighbours and getting into a conversation, and that conversation could go anywhere, and suddenly you could both come up with this incredible thing that's going to change the world. You know, we all have the ability to do that. And it may not even seem like a world-changing idea at the time. It could be something really simple. But you voice it, you put it into effect, and it takes off, it resonates with people, and suddenly reality changes. And it was all because you took the time to go and meet the person next door and have a conversation. You know, we can all do this. And you shouldn't think that you're not capable of having these great ideas and doing great things. And you know, if you've got respect for people and you're prepared to listen to what they say, then they'll listen to what you say. And we can change it. We could change the world in a day. We really could. I mean, it would be so simple if we suddenly respected each other and did the right thing in all that we do. You know, so don't be afraid to go and meet people. Don't be afraid to break down barriers in your community. And don't be afraid to voice your political opinions to them. Just do it in the right way. Do it subtly at first. Give people a little bit of information. Don't turn a fire hose onto them. But get to know them first. Get to break down the barriers. You know, have a beer with them. Bake some biscuits for them. Whatever. You know, do something to break down the barrier and become friends so that you can actually have a conversation and see where the conversation goes. You know, that's how it all starts, just people talking to each other. That's how every conspiracy started. That's how every problem started, just guys talking to each other saying, hey, let's do this. Nobody will notice, you know. And that's how all these conspiracies get started. That's how all the bad stuff gets started. Even if you go back to the Rothschilds and the meeting that they had back in 1776 or whatever it was, the Bavarian Illuminati, when they started, it was just these certain families getting down and saying, hey, I've got an idea. Let's do this. Let's control the money system. Let's start this whole global empire. And it worked. It was an idea that resonated with the other families. They had the means to do it. They had control of certain banks. And so they were able to do it. But it was just an idea that someone actually had and sat down and conversed with somebody else, and it took off. You know, and we can all have these ideas. So don't think that you're a little person who's capable of nothing, because nothing could be further from the truth. The whole world is just little people, and everybody has equal value. And I think that awakening in itself is hugely motivational and hugely empowering for people to realize their own potential, that all that exists here is people. And all that exists, all the problems and all the good stuff, everything, just from ideas that people had. And you can do that. We can all have these ideas. And if we respect each other and unite our consciousness together, we'll find a way out of this mess really, really quickly. You know, if we could just respect each other, we could simply turn and say, hey, we're going this way now, and invite the governments to come with us. And if they don't, we'll leave them behind, you know, because they're just people as well. You know, so, you know, if we've got this respect, then we've got a huge, huge communal groundswell. And we'll change the world very, very quickly. So it absolutely has to start on the ground, in your own community, in your own consciousness, with your own family, with your own neighbors, with people that you know already and people that you haven't met. Don't be afraid to meet people. And when you do meet people, don't judge them. Don't judge them if they have a different idea. If you think the earth is flat, if you think the earth's a ball, it doesn't matter. As long as you both understand that it's a slavery system, it's a prison at the moment, and we need to emancipate ourselves from the slavery system, and then we could have a really serious debate about whether the earth's round or flat. And not only that, we could go and find out, because we'd have the freedom to do so. But if we don't have this respect for each other and we continue to be divided in our response, where we're not going to get anywhere, I think people are realizing that now. They're seeing that now. Even with the flat earth movement, it's falling on its bum a little bit, because people are realizing it's not going anywhere, because all it is argument and division. And if they put that down and actually respect people who think differently, they realize that there's a way out. So in a way, it's brought a lot of unity to at least one section of the community. Once that section of the community can put down their animosity to people who think differently than they do, we could have a huge groundswell come of it. So, you know, there's lots of positive things to look at. If people can put their stuff down with each other, and we will be able to move this forward. And I think this is going to be a very significant year. I really do. I think we're going to see some change this year. And I think it's going to be change for the better.
Mm. What you said there, Max, has been reflected back by a couple of posts. Yvonne's posted in the chat room that her neighbour was using a power drill at 2 o'clock this morning. And where we live, we're a little market town on the east coast of England. And the town has increased its population sixfold since the early 90s, when we started getting this European migration here. And the flats we live in, there's about 45 flats, and there's 3 or 4 English-speaking families in here. All our neighbours, initially when we moved in, were Portuguese and Polish. It now seems that most of those have gone home, and we're now surrounded by Latvians, Lithuanians and Romanians. And I must admit that those people get treated abysmally by the natives in the town. So therefore there's a great deal of suspicion with us because we're English. But we have managed to strike up a few conversations with them. It's quite difficult because people are always moving in and out of here. It's like a transit camp. But once you get started, so you can maybe take in a parcel when the postman calls and they're not in, those kind of things can start to break down the barriers, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, and all these refugees and immigrants that come in, I mean, they're looking for a better life. They've come, you know, they're not to blame for any of the problems. They're not your problem. The problem is the government that's created the situation that allowed them to be in a state of hardship, which caused them to have to immigrate, you know? I mean, you've really got to start looking at this. All of these problems come from government. It isn't the people. You know, a lot of these situations are created like this simply to create this division, create this animosity, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
These immigrants come in and you create a cultural war and a race war in the suburbs, and they call it multiculturalism.
Mm-hmm.
It's not what it's about at all. It's about division. And if you can't speak to the people, if you don't really know the language and you can't really communicate with each other as well, it makes it hard to get any unity, doesn't it, you know?
Yeah, well, I get so many people. If I go for a couple of pints, I'll get people, guarantee without fail, every time I go to the pub, the phrase always comes up, bloody foreigners. Because there's so many people who can't get a job now because unless you're prepared to work for way under the minimum wage, the gangmasters don't want to know you. And I say to them, but hang on, when I tell you about when I used to live in Spain or Switzerland, you always give me a pat on the back, and wow, you're really brave to do that, and so good that you're trying to do that to improve your life. But these people are only doing exactly what I was doing. You're patting me on the back, and they're bloody foreigners. Well, what do you think I was when I lived in Zurich, when I lived in Spain? I was a bloody foreigner, but I was welcomed with open arms there.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, but because of this economic model, and I mean, there's so much theatre around it. I mean, look at the way the media spins all this, and everything's based on economics in our society, and it's all based on work, you know. And, you know, there's jobs there, and people won't do them, so they get migrants in, and the migrants will do them, and then you get more migrants here. Well, hang on, these jobs are gone, so you get more migrants coming in, and then they're able to undercut the other migrants, and so the basic wage goes down, and if the local inhabitants were just prepared to do some of the crappy jobs to begin with, then it wouldn't happen that way. You know what I'm saying? I mean, here's a job that nobody Absolutely. Will do, so migrants come and do it, and then you complain that migrants are taking the job that you wouldn't do.
Absolutely.
So, and because you wouldn't do it, and because that happened, then more migrants come in, and so the wages go down even more, you know? And it's because you wouldn't do the crappy job to begin with, you know. And sure, okay, we don't want to do crappy jobs. Well, okay, well, let's start looking at the money system. Let's start addressing the root cause of the problem about this government. Why are they borrowing money from a private bank? Why do we have to do these crappy jobs and get paid these crappy wages? You know, why is it all about supporting this economic system? Let's really get down to the root cause of the problem. Stop blaming the migrants. Let's start looking at why the situation is there to begin with. And you start realizing that it's all been contrived by government. So why have they done it this way? Well, perhaps they've done it this way so they can bring the migrants in, so they can start undermining the society, so they can start with this whole multicultural experiment, so they can just undermine the whole planet the way they've done. I mean, you know, let's start looking at how we're being played here with all this. And the problem isn't the migrants. You know, if the migrants are a problem in your country, then it's the legislation that's created the problem that is the problem. You know, and you can complain about the migrants all you like, but until you deal with the criminal cabal at the top that put the legislation in place which created the situation is just going to continue. No matter how many band-aids you put on it, no matter how much you complain about the migrant situation. You know, and again, these are just people trying to get a better life somewhere, and they're just people, the same as you. Because they speak a different language doesn't mean that they're any less than you. They're just people with children and families who love their children and love their families and want a better world and have been trained that they have to pay to be alive as well, so they've gone somewhere where they might actually be able to make some money so they can do so. So, you know, you've really got to look at this whole situation. It's so contrived. It really is. And, you know, I keep saying to people, World War III will be fought in the suburbs. You know, they've already seeded all of our nations for it. We've got this multicultural mess going on, which isn't multiculturalism, because all of the people are at loggerheads against each other. You know, you've got the Lithuanian community and the Greek community and the Irish community and the British community and the Chinese community and the Iranian community and all these different communities all living in all these different countries, and they all don't get along with all the other people. It's ridiculous, you know. So once you have the money system start falling apart and Europe start tearing itself apart the way it's doing, then suddenly, you know, when you have the Croatians warring against the Serbians in Europe, then you have the Croatians and Serbians warring in the suburbs in London as well, you know, and so then it goes worldwide, and suddenly you've got this happening everywhere. It's all been said, it's all been done by design, it's all been contrived, and it's all based on this economic system, and it all comes from legislation.
Yeah, we've got Johnny Meath's just agreed with you there. He said, yes, Max, all with the same feelings. He said, foreigners are like borders, it's all made up shit.
Yeah, it is, exactly. It's all contrived, it's all been done by design, you know, so you can't blame them.
No. No, we've had some great conversations with some of our neighbours. It's often a little difficult because their command of English is very poor, and mine of Latvian, Lithuanian, Polish, Portuguese and Romanian is non-existent. But I did have the Portuguese guy downstairs when we first moved in invite me round to play chess with him. Unfortunately, I haven't played chess since I was at secondary school, and I was rubbish at it then, so I don't think I'll be much of a challenge for him now. But sadly, he got hassle from the neighbours, so he's moved on, so he's no longer around.
Yeah, that's a real shame, you know. It's a real shame. But even just like I said, baking cakes, baking biscuits, just doing something, you know, taking the garbage out for them, just something, just bringing them a gift or something, making people welcome. You know, and if you've got local neighbours who don't like them, well, maybe get to know those people as well, mm-hmm. and you might be able to actually influence the way they think about things, you know. And you just start being a little bit more human to them, because, I mean, they're probably having a hard time in their life, and the easiest way they can get energy in their life is to go and give somebody else a hard time, so it may as well be the foreigner who's moved in next door, you know, because he's a foreigner anyway, so... We don't like foreigners because we're trained not to, so I can take it all out on them and it'll be good. It'll make me feel good about myself so I don't have to deal with my own miserable life. So, you know, they're all in the same situation, everybody. You know, and unfortunately, everybody's harvesting energy from everybody else because that's the most readily available source of energy for them. No one's connected to source. No one really knows how to give anymore without expecting something back, you know, so because everyone...
As an example, I live... in it's an ex-council house, and the next door is a council house, and there was an old lady that lived in there for years and years and years, and then a couple of years ago she died, and then we were sort of wondering, who are we going to get next door? Anyway, as it turned out, it was a Chinese family, and there were about three kids, two were teenagers, one younger, I think there was actually a grandparent as well, so there's quite a few of them in there. And I did notice one day that they'd got no curtains up. So I said to my missus, I said, we've got some spare curtains. I said, well, let's go round and offer them, you know, and if they say no and they're offended or anything, that's fine, we've tried. So I went round, I gave these, I said, I've got some curtains. Don't know if you want them. I noticed you've not got any up. Couldn't really speak any English, it was just a gesture. You know, so, and she took them and they put them up and everything. And then a couple of days later, she came round to my door with her young daughter, who obviously could speak better English, who'd been here longer, was at school in this country. And she said, we've got this cake. We brought this cake for you. It's because we're having a party next door and we just want to apologise. There might be some noise, but here's a cake for you. So they get us this cake. And... They didn't make any noise, and they were all done by about 9:30. And, you know, these people, it's just only takes a really small gesture. And now, you know, they know that they can come to us at any time, and, you know, we know that we can go to them with any problems. And so there's never going to be any animosity. And that's all it takes, just small gestures.
Exactly, you know, it really, really does make a difference, and we can do it with everybody. And I've been saying this ever since I started with the radio show, you know. Whatever you're doing, do a little bit extra and give it to some people around you and break down those barriers. You can really make a difference in their lives. Now, even if you're at the supermarket sometimes, I'll buy the groceries of the person next to me just to, you know, give them a new perspective on humanity, even if it's someone that I'll never, ever see again in my life, you know. And I've done that to people. I did it with one woman, and she just burst into tears because she said she was down to her last $20 and she'd lost all faith in humanity, and for a stranger to have just bought her groceries for her just restored her whole faith in humanity. And, you know, so you can really make a difference in people's lives by just doing something, giving, and something small. It makes all the difference, and it restores their faith in people. It inspires them. And these little changes can make such a difference. They really can. And you can find that you've got a real friend from just doing something that's simple like that, just giving to someone unconditionally for no reason other than it feels good to give, you know. And it's a good thing to do. It'll break down these barriers. I mean, I've had a wonderful amount of success with this type of attitude, and I've met so many people, and I've managed to travel all these places and do all these incredible things just from giving. And you'd be surprised at the difference you can make. And we can all do this. We can all make this difference. And it may seem like something little, but, you know, everybody feels isolated. Everybody feels locked in their own little bubble and lost in their own world. Everyone's apprehensive of the future, no matter how positive they may seem. Everybody's got these little issues, and everybody needs a little helping hand somewhere along the line. Everyone needs a smile, and you can make a real difference in someone's life just by doing something small and going giving to them and getting to know your neighbors and letting them know that you're a real person, you're not a threat to them. You know, these sorts of things can really make a difference. So, you know, if we all did this, imagine if we all started doing this in all our communities all around the world, eventually we'd all link up together. You know, everyone would trust everybody else, and everyone would be able to count on everybody else, you know. Sure, there'd be bad elements in there around the place, but mostly you'd find that people had broken down the barriers, and they now had a community they could count on, and we could make such a difference with this type of an attitude. You know, little subtle changes in your perspective and subtle ways the way you treat other people can make a huge difference when you extrapolate it out onto a worldwide scale, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Max. Time's beaten us again. We're near the end of the hour. Have you got any, like, links that you could possibly give out where people can get hold of your information? Obviously, I'll put these links on the podcast when I put it up on the website, so it'll all be there on record.
Well, you can go and find all of my work at thecrowhouse.com, and the other project that I'm running is Full Circle Project, and the website for that is fullcircleproject.net. I recommend people go and sign up to that, get involved with the Community Connector. But you'll find everything about me at thecrowhouse.com. I'm also going to be speaking at Anacapulco in Mexico next month for anybody who might be in the area. And I'll be speaking at the Free Your Mind Summit in Philadelphia in April, and at Ian Crane's AV America in Portland in April as well in the United States. So hope to see anybody there. Here comes another plane.
Wow, that's really keeping you busy, Max. Thank you so much for joining us, and I do hope you'll be able to come back and join us some point in the not-too-distant future. It's been a real pleasure, and thank you, Jason. You've been great today. I know you're not in the best of health. You've done a great job. What a trooper.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, Max.
I'd just like to remind everyone that we'll be back on Tuesday evening at 7 p.m., and we've got something very special. We're on a bit of a roll at the minute. We've got Roger Hayes, who's been very quiet just lately, and he's talking about his new big project that's coming up. So we'll be back on Tuesday. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Max. Thanks, Jason. And I'd like to play you out with one of Ken's tunes. It's the latest cover of a Pink Floyd. The man's got some bottle covering Pink Floyd tunes, I'd like to say. I'll play you out with this one, and good afternoon, everyone, and we'll be back soon.